This is Eric Sinrod from Duane Morris in San Francisco, where the sun is shining, and I'm with...
Jonathan Armstrong, live from the UK, where regrettably the rain has come.
Anyway, we're here with our weekly Tech Law 10, where we bring you a topic a week having to do with the law and technology. And Jonathan, I know you were spending some time on the train last night thinking about email.
I was indeed, and my thoughts were provoked, if you like, by Mark Schultz, who listens into our podcasts from Boston. I'm sounding like a corny commercial DJ now. So thanks very much, Mark, for getting us thinking on this topic. And I don't know whether you have them in the US, but in the UK we have summer schools, so I might go and learn how to be a watercolor painter or refresh my skills. As you know, Eric, I was down in the southwest of the UK last week touching up my bodyboarding skills and getting some, I believe you call them radical waves, dude, over there in California. But it struck me that Mark was talking about just simple things about sending emails and what are the risks of sending emails. And it seemed to me we could do our very own little 10-minute summer school on 10 tips for creating and sending emails. And what do you think of that, Eric? Good idea or bad?
I think it's a great idea. I prefer it to what my daughter's doing right now. She's at a California university for summer school studying chemistry and math. So let's do email.
Yeah, let's do that. And I apologize. Some of this is going to be basic, and some people, it's stuff. I think all of it is stuff that we already know. But I just wondered if it was worth just setting out 10 simple tips, and we're going to put them on our new LinkedIn discussion group. So do join in and add your own tips as we go along. So here's what I've got anyway. Number one, first thing I think always is, would a call be better? I think in many jurisdictions, whatever you put down on an email, you're committing to writing. So it might just be better to pick up the phone, and then you can hear the tone of somebody's voice. And sometimes misunderstandings are easily allayed if you've got that voice-to-voice contact and you're able to deal with them. Number two I've got down, look at the address. We've talked about this before, Eric, but when you send somebody a business email onto a Gmail account, that's not going to be as secure as the best enterprise systems. Bear that in mind. Bear in mind the fact that if somebody's on vacation or/holiday, they may be pinging their work email to a Gmail account at this time of year. They might be pinging it to an account that's easier for the Mac to access on their iPad or iPhone or BlackBerry, personal BlackBerry, when they're on holiday. So always watch out what you're sending in the email, and especially at this time of year, I think, assume it's not going to be as secure. Similarly, I would look at who I'm CCing into the email. I think there really is a CC culture. We tend to copy people into emails. We talked about it when we talked about the Murdoch problems and News International. And we've seen since we recorded that podcast, Eric, that that does seem to be true. There have been a whole wave of extra arrests, it seems, based on people that were CC'd into emails. And I'm guessing they wish they hadn't been CC'd into those emails now. Number four, look at where the recipients are. Do you know the laws in the country where they're based? For example, you may have privilege in an email that you create in the UK or the US, but that privilege might not attract if one of the recipients is based in the Netherlands, for example, and you might have inadvertently waived privilege in all that you were saying in your email. Look at the time of day. I know from experience that obviously none of our colleagues would ever do something like this, but people tend to email, US people tend to email people in Europe late on a Friday evening, past what we euphemistically call in the UK the cocktail hour. If somebody is tired and emotional, if you're getting them at 11 o'clock on a Friday evening, are you going to get a considered response for them, from them? Or if they've already gone to the pub, are they going to give you a flippant response? And is that going to come back to embarrass you later? And I know we've already seen that in some antitrust inquiries, for example, that people give a much more candid response after the cocktail hour on a Friday evening. And look at cultural issues. So, you know, if you're going to say, thanks very much for that favor, I'll buy you a drink, are you going to offend somebody's sensibilities? And I'm not one for being overly politically correct about these things, but I think we do have to bear them in mind, certainly. Look out particularly for content. I heard a story once from a regulator who says that whenever he sees his servers to look at emails, he now does a search for the words, if this gets out then. And he says it's amazing what you can find that people put in an email, if this gets out then. You know, if you're in the type of organization that is susceptible to raids of this type, rest assured the words, if this gets out then, are going to help it get out, not stop it. Look at abbreviations and sort of lazy use of language. I'll give you an example of this too. I know that there was a very big professional liability case in the UK just around languages. A US client rang a UK law firm and asked to speak to the person who was dealing with that matter. They were told that that person was out. And the US client said, let me speak to somebody on the same level. Now, as I understand it, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, Eric, in the US that would really mean, you know, somebody of the same seniority. Mm-hmm. In the UK, we take that more literally, somebody on the same floor. So the US client thought he was speaking to a senior 20-year qualified lawyer. He was actually speaking to a very junior lawyer who just happened to be on the same floor as the guy he was trying to speak to. He pressed that lawyer into giving advice and said, come on, I really need an answer in 5 minutes, thinking it was somebody senior enough to take the call, but it wasn't. So watch for that sort of relaxed use of language, particularly in emails, because they're always judged with hindsight. Look at attachments as well. The UK Information Commissioner brought another regulatory action just this morning of the type that they're particularly interested in at the moment of DLP, data loss prevention software, and how are we stopping people uploading large attachments that contain personal data? How are we stopping people put those onto memory sticks to put on emails later and so on and so on? So watch particularly for what's in the attachments and make sure that the right attachment is there. Tip number 8 I've got, read back the email after you've composed it, after you've put the addresses in, after you've put the attachments on, read it back, preceding, you're reading it back to yourself with the words, well, Your Honor. Because I think, you know, imagining that you're reading this email in a court that's open to dubious interpretation is a good step and might save you trouble. And my 9th and 10th, look at encryption. If it really is sensitive, if it contains sensitive personal data, if it's share price sensitive, then really is email the best medium at all? And if it's got to go electronically, it probably ought to be encrypted. And look at retention. How long is the email going to be kept for? Is it the sort of email that you need to keep a paper record of? And can you rely on software providers, particularly when people are outsourcing email more and more out with the organization now? So they're my quick 10, the products of my train journey yesterday. Anything to add, Eric?
Yeah, just a few things. I think you covered the waterfront well, even while you were bodyboarding. I would simply follow up on a couple of them, and that is, you know, do think about whether a phone call would be more appropriate. You know, once upon a time, the main means of communication was, you know, verbal and not committed to writing or, you know, electronic data preservation, if you will. And now we tend to, you know, live our lives through our fingertips onto our computers and communicate that way so freely and so spontaneously that oftentimes we might say something on the impulse that then lives on forever and can be incriminating. And this might get to one of your latter points, and that is, if you do want to put it in an email, do read it again before you send it. Sometimes a considered evaluation of what you've written might cause you to revise it or not send it in the first place. And then otherwise, just to to follow up on your point about considering, you know, differences in languages, you know, you use the example level. Well, we all know, you know, knocking somebody up in the United States is different than in the UK. Here it means getting somebody pregnant. There, you're just trying to, you know, find somebody in their home or somewhere else and, you know, knocking them up to see them. So that's worth thinking about also on a humorous note. Now, I know you wanted to talk about more about, you know, what we're doing on Tech Law 10.
Yeah, just to very briefly say, we've set up a fledgling group on LinkedIn. We'd be really grateful if you would join it. What we're going to try and do each time is put some resources. So I'll put those 10 up on the LinkedIn group. If you can think of a 12 or a 13 or a whatever, then please do, and we'll try and have discussions about topics. From time to time, Eric and I are going to link to other articles. It is a fledgling group. Tell us what you think. And we, again, thanks for the feedback from some other people who suggested this as a way of keeping the debate going. And so to get to that, all you've got to do is, if you're already on LinkedIn, the box in the top right-hand corner, click down Groups, put in Tech Law 10, and you should be able to find us that way. So this is the time where we give our contact details, and we thank you for connecting. So I'm Jonathan Armstrong, which is jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. And you, Eric?
This is Eric Shinrod at ejshinrod@duanemorris.com. You can find both of us on Facebook and obviously LinkedIn, Twitter. We're everywhere. So we look forward to speaking to you again next week. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Bye now.